Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, we've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk a little about wheat seed treatments. If you've got a question for us or anything you want us to talk about on the show today, you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and before we get into wheat seed treatments, we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag here in just a second. But Darren, when you think about our farm, we're out spraying right now in soybeans, fungicide, foliar fertilizer, and insecticide. I'm just curious, which one of those three do you think is going to pay most for us? I know all three of them are going to pay, or we wouldn't do them. Which one do you think is going to give us this year the best ROI? I was just thinking about that today.
Well, with the crop canopy that we've got, the weather we've been having, the disease protection is the biggest one this year. We don't have as many insects as we normally see this time of year, but you never know. I guess I haven't scouted every single acre of every single field, and there could be some hot spots, surely. But in general, we don't have as many bugs. We've done a better job on the fertility this year than ever. I think the fungicide is the one that has the most potential right now, but I'll say this. Because we've got such a good crop coming, a little extra boost of fertility, I don't know, that could be the winner too.
Yeah, we don't have enough bugs out there that I think we're going to gain 10 bushels or anything like that from the insecticide. 2 bushels, sure, but probably not 10. The foliar fertilizer, we'll see. We'll see what the weather does here for the rest of the month. I think we got a good chance for that to be the best payout. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'm leaning toward the fungicide. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
Mailbag time. Questions. Answers. Brian. Darren. Mailbag time. Yeah. Mailbag.
All right, I got a question from TJ, and he said, I've got some soybeans that are getting really tall. I would like to stunt the growth. Is there any product that will help regulate the growth without hurting the yield? The beans are in the R3 stage.
At this point, I doubt it. Now, early on, before flowering, there are a lot of people who use products like Cobra, Ultra Blazer, Flexstar. All those are PPO herbicides, and they will stunt the beans a little bit. You might drop a few leaves even, and very rarely do we see yield damage. In fact, many times you see yield gain because you have shortened the plants, you have a little less lodging, and you might even have a little less disease because you probably have fewer leaves out there and you got a little bit better air movement. Also, this year, Darren, I've seen a lot of the Group 15s stunting plants. We've seen Pursuit in the past stunt plants. So there are a lot of herbicides that can stunt the plants a little bit without having a major yield impact. Now, in crops like wheat or barley, for example, there are a lot of farmers who use Palisade, and they say, hey, I'm not losing yield with a application, one or two applications of Palisade. That product is not labeled for soybeans, so there are no growth regulator products that I know that are designed just to shorten the beans,
and that's Kip Cullers was on our show this spring, and he mentioned that there was a growth hormone that he had been using now or starting using some testing. He wasn't willing to share it yet because he said, I haven't seen it enough to say, yep, for sure it's going to do it. Maybe it's a one-time thing. But I know he's working on that. And, you know, we've tried a lot of different things in that regard too, but we just don't have a problem with beans getting too tall.
No, we haven't really tried any plant growth hormones just to shorten beans.
Not necessarily for our own farm, like on a big scale, because we don't have this problem. We don't have beans that get crazy, crazy tall like a lot of the guys will talk about.
Well, it depends on how tall is crazy tall. I'm shoulder high, I think, is too tall.
But like
and
in
we
our
got
first,
a lot of that.
In our first step plots at our field day this year, there are a couple of the guys that are trying to shorten things up. And are they shorter?
Well, what are they doing?
A little bit.
What are they doing?
I don't know entirely what they're doing because it's kind of the same thing. Try a little of this for me and let's see if we can shorten things up. But I know.
As far as I know, we've done nothing ever to shorten beans than herbicide.
Yeah, we have. Well, but yeah, herbicide too.
Other than a herbicide.
Okay.
We have done nothing to shorten beans. There's been no plant growth hormone that I know of that we've been able to put out there. We've even tried anything of. To answer your question, no. There's nothing that we know of that can shorten those beans.
One comment that Jimmy Frederick had at our field day this year, he said that if you've got just tons and tons of fertility out there at planting time, that you get more elongation on the beans, and that if there is a way to feed the nutrition later, that you could avoid a little bit of that. And I understand that. We see the same thing with wheat.
Well, you can, but
the problem is, can you get the fertility in time?
Well, and sure, you can. If you have sand and irrigation, yes. If you have no irrigation and heavy soil, it's not going to happen. So you have to have the fertility out there. But here's the other thing that I will tell you. You've got to plant early. So if you're starting to have issues with that stem elongation is too much, you need to plant earlier. Okay, so around here, the first planting date for crop insurance with soybeans is April 25th. I would say 0% of farmers plant April 25th. A few farmers are starting to plant the first week of May, and a lot of the soybeans are planted in mid-May. So it's a full 3 weeks after the first planting date. Try planting that very first date. You'll find the beans are shorter. Same thing as with corn. Try planting your first crop insurance date. Okay, around here, that's April 10th for us. If we plant April 10th, I can promise you, we will have much shorter corn than when we go out and plant June 10th, for example.
Yeah, we definitely had some people at our field day that were talking about that they're planting beans first.
I wouldn't plant beans first. We have 15 days there where you can plant corn, and you, according to crop insurance, you're still not at the first date of soybeans. So why would you plant beans first? You don't want to go before the first crop insurance date. The crop insurance companies, let's not forget, you can call them smart, or you can just call them they have all the data. That's the way I look at it. But don't forget, for us as an individual farm, yeah, we farm 3,000 acres and we got a lot of dollars that are at stake. But just think about the insurance companies, how many dollars they have at stake. They have all the data, all the planting dates, everybody, all the loss information. They know when you can plant on average.
You know,
and if they say April 25th on beans, that's when I'm planting.
It's interesting too, Brian, that we listen to growers in the South that will make comments along those lines. And then does that pertain to growers in Canada or growers in the northern U.S.? You know, if you're going to try those things out, try them on a small amount of acres first and find out how they work. One thing you should try on all your acres this year if you're planting wheat is wheat seed treatments. We'll discuss those coming up right after this.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever, but disease can stand in the way, like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dalaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dalaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery on farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is wheat seed treatments. We get a lot of questions about this. What are people putting on the wheat? I know at the Ag PhD Field Day this summer, we had many questions about what are you doing differently on the wheat? How are you protecting? And growers talked about a number of different issues they're having with bugs, with diseases and others. And man, getting that wheat crop off to a great start with a good seed treatment is certainly important. We've got TJ Benz with us right now with Syngenta. TJ, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about this wheat seed treatment choice that growers are making. And we see a lot of acres that don't get a seed treatment, and guys are trying to cut costs. And they say, well, let's see how this crop looks first before I invest a lot into it. But, man, if you don't get a good stand to begin with, I don't know if it's ever going to be great.
Right. That's a big part of what the seed treatment is. I mean, it's not every year you have problems, but there's probably areas in every field where there is something different going on. And, you know, if you don't start with a good root system, you are not going to be able to maximize your genetic potential for the growing season.
You know, even in the areas that are dry, we see Rhizoctonia being a problem. And we've really liked what we've seen with one of the products that you work with, Vibrance Extreme. What are you seeing different? What's so revolutionary for farmers that wow, we've been out with seed treatments for a long time, but we've never had control like this?
Yeah, so this is one of the very first seed treatment that's came out. It's an SDHI, and that's what it's really, I mean, it does an excellent job on taking care of that Rhizoctonia. You know, and that's one of the things that I always think about out here in western Kansas is that it's present in every soil, and it usually shows up when it is warm, with warm, dry soils, and we're dealing with that a lot of years, and we're drilling wheat.
Yeah, the warm, dry soil leads farmers to believe, well, I'm not going to have a disease because everything is dry. You know, the other side of it,
right.
So we mentioned Rhizoc. You look at Pythium control and some of these diseases that prefer wet conditions. I mean, we can go from dry to wet in a hurry.
Well, and you can have that in the exact same field, too, depending on your topography.
Yeah, that's exactly
right.
That's
the problem you see with a lot of seed treatments out there is they are focused on one thing, but you don't have just that one risk throughout an entire field. You can have your high spots, your low spots, and have two different completely different environments in that same field.
You know, when you talk about that, the variation as you go across ground, that is one of those things where above ground we see, well, you spray a herbicide, I see dead weeds. You know, I see patches of weeds out there. I spray them, I kill them, I'm happy. I put the seed treatment on. I don't really know what to be looking for here. What do you advise for growers? Do you advise root digs, do you stand counts? What kind of things should they do to really see that return on their investment?
I really advise root digs, you know, and that's the thing with the seed treatment. It's not one of those things you can see driving down the road at 60 miles an hour. You actually have to get out and look. And, you know, that early season time frame, I mean, really our roots are what is feeding this plant the rest of the growing season. So I guess I pay more attention to roots all season long than I do the top growth because that's what's going to give me everything I need going into that head.
You know, you think about three modes of action in a product like that too, where you've got a lot of different things going on. Are we seeing resistance with some of the seed treatment fungicides or are we just trying to be preventative about that?
We are being preventative, and that comes back to the fact that you don't know what disease you're looking at or going to be experiencing each year, because you could start drilling your wheat one day when it's warm and dry, catch a rain, and the next week when you get back in the field, you have a completely different situation. So if you've already put your treatment on and you're not going very broad spectrum, you've got the wrong thing. So that's why we have to pick a very broad spectrum mixture to be able to control all those opportunities that could arise to take yield off of your wheat.
Yeah, there are a lot of choices that growers have in the seed treatment market, and really the choices are pretty economical too when you think about the amount of yield that you're protecting and your one shot
right
to do it. So we've been talking with TJ Benz about what's going on with wheat seed treatments. TJ, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the info.
Thank you.
Got Meredith Van Sambeek on with us right now, and Meredith, you know, thinking about about wheat seed treatments and Arysta certainly in this market as well with multiple mode of action products. When we look at all these different modes of action, why are we bringing so many different things in? We talk about preventing resistance, but each one of them kind of has its own piece of the puzzle to control as well.
Well, that is correct, Darren. When you look at the various diseases we have and no one product controls everything, you know, the real outlier is really your Oomycetes, which is your Pythium organism in wheat. And we like to use a pretty good rate of metal axle just because we don't want that one to rear its ugly head and control and give us problems down the road. And then the other two products we have are very broad spectrum, which is Ranconiaconazole and Ranconiaconazole with Carboxin or Vitavax in it. And those are very good on your Fusarium and Rhizoctonia organisms. And they also do a great job on the Penicillium aspergillus, your what we call the dry seed rot types of organisms. So by putting those three different products in combination, you pretty much covered the whole gamut from top to bottom as far as pathogenic fungi.
You know, when you think about Carboxin, I guess I don't always think about it that, hey, that is an SDHI product, and TJ was talking about having that SDHI chemistry in there. What do you really see with that? I mean, a lot of times we're talking plant health, right?
Well, we're seeing the SDHI, and ours is a bit unique compared to some of our competition because Carboxin has been around as a molecule since the late 60s, so it's older than a lot of the audience that we have out here talking that we're talking to, but we still have no known resistance anywhere in the world to that Carboxin molecule. So that's somewhat unique in the fact that it's been around that long. But it, you know, is very good on Rhizoctonia and also some of the dry seed rots, the Penicillium and Aspergillus. But it's a lot more broad spectrum than some of the competitors, which are basically like a rifle shot. They're only good on Rhizoctonia as an SDHI. Our Carboxin is more broad spectrum than that, and it controls, you know, some activity on Fusarium as well as the Rhizoc. So it's unique compared to most of our competition's SDHI molecules.
Yeah, there are definitely differences with wheat seed treatments. You talk about Ipconazole in there as well as the Triazole that we've seen good performance with that particular one on Rhizoc and Fusarium and other things. And you mentioned Metalaxyl earlier about having a good strong rate in there for Pythium. This is where we see a lot of cost cutting in the industry with Metalaxyl rates getting trimmed. How big a deal is this? Is this something I'm just worried about, Meredith, or is it something growers really should be concerned about?
Well, it's probably less of a problem here in the Midwest, but when you start getting out in the Pacific Northwest, where I know you've got some stores and locations out there, we're actually seeing some very resistant Pythium to the Metalaxyls, the Mefenoxims, and that type of thing out there. So we're actually finding that in some of these locations, the resistance is so strong that if you put any kind of Metalaxyl in there in that organism, it'll actually explode the population that's resistant and actually cause more of a detriment than if you used a product that didn't have Mefenoxam or something like that. We're actually seeing some results with some of the research out there using Thyram and some of the really old chemistries that are still effective against that complex actually being more beneficial than putting something in that's got, you know, Metalaxyl Mefenoxam in it.
Got about 30 seconds, Meredith. How important is the insecticide component on a wheat seed treatment?
We really like our high rate like we've got in Crest when we go down into that wheat cereals market in Kansas, Oklahoma, because we want to control not only the wireworm and the aphids, we want to control aphids clear out into late November, December because they've got that extended period, but we're also very good on fall armyworms. So with that Crest level where we've got the high, super high level of imidacloprid, it's given us a lot of yield advantage compared to Gaucho or some of the other products that, you know, have got, you know, maybe only 20 or 25% of what the active ingredient load is that we've got in Crest.
Yeah, that high rate of insecticide has made a difference in the wireworms as well. That's been a big concern for many of the growers that have been asking questions of our show as well. Meredith Van Sambeek with Arysta, really appreciate having you on today. Stay tuned. There's more Ag PhD coming up right after this. In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
With DuPont Approach Prima Fungicide, there's a difference. A real difference you can actually see in the health of your crops and the health of your bottom line. From superior coverage to more reliable performance, Approach Prima delivers long-lasting results against hard-to-control diseases like frog eye leaf spot, while the preventive and curative action gives you the application flexibility you need for greater yield potential. So see the difference of Approach Prima for yourself. Visit approachprima.dupont.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions.
Farmers, wouldn't you love to have one set of concaves for all crops? With Estes Performance Concaves, you can. That means no more backbreaking work, changing concaves, or downtime. Plus, Estes Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage and a cleaner sample. It's the best money you can spend on your combine. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and take back your bushels. That's 765-650-4131.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC Miticide. Just one application by ground or air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about wheat seed treatments. And who better to ask a question about wheat than former National Farmer of the Year Lee Lubbers, who farms in South Central South Dakota. Lee, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, when you think about seed treatments on wheat, what are you looking for your farm in a seed treatment?
Broad spectrum treatment. We never want to cut any corners because disease pressure starts the minute that seed hits the ground. It's no matter if you think it's a good, healthy seed bed, it's still kind of a hostile environment. And especially with no-till, with our residue levels, we're just increasing risk. So we run a broad spectrum. We don't want to cut any corners in any way on our seed treatment.
You know, when you think about crop rotation, that certainly comes into play here to reducing your risk, but it doesn't eliminate everything. Do you change based on what kind of crop rotation you have?
We have not so far. I mean, there's just some awesome chemistries out there. I mean, you guys have put us on to some of these newer seed treatments, and they're just, you know, they're fungicidal, they're insecticide incorporated in, polymers. I mean, there's some great things out there to work with. You know, as usual, technology has come into play in seed treatments from 10, 15 years ago. They've eliminated a lot of dust off issues and stuff like that. So we just like a good loaded up product because we learned years ago you don't want to cut corners when you put your seed into the ground.
I know you're doing a little bit of work on some of the microbial seed treatments and in-furrow treatments on wheat. How did they seem to handle it, even with your really strong seed treatment you're using?
They work out fine. We actually, one cone is chemistry, the other mixing cone is biological, and they inject right at the point of the vaporizer. So contact is basically nil, and then they're vaporized, and we've had no antagonism issues. We're getting good efficacy. I guess just a little bit of pre-planning, and it's worked out really well. They complement each other.
Yeah, having a separate cone is a really good idea, because I think there's more of these biological-type treatments showing promise, and so there's going to be more and more coming on the market, yet we've got a fungicide or multiple fungicides are putting on the seed. We want to stop the bad guys. We don't want to hurt the good guys as we're going out there. And speaking about some of the bad guys, what about the bugs? Are you seeing much in wheat, and are there certain bugs that you're always on the lookout for?
We always have to keep an eye out later in the season, especially for bird cherry oat aphids and what they can do for injecting toxin into the plants. So we have to be proactive there. But a good seed treatment prevents a lot of feeding issues in the fall. We've noticed that. But we have had instances. We do a lot of scouting in the fall. On wheat, it can be a little bit more common, but 2 years in the last five, we have found instances where bird cherry oat aphids have moved in late, even in October, and we've had to treat wheat that was at two leaf stage with insecticide to kill them.
Wow. Wow, yeah, that's a bad insect, and being able to stop them is certainly critical to getting a good stand. All right, well, I want to shift gears just a little bit. At the Ag PhD Field Day this year, you were kind enough to manage a plot on the farm and to speak to a ton of farmers at the field day. One of the guys you were speaking with was Eric Watson, the world record wheat grower. What did you pick up off of Eric that it might be something that you try out on your farm?
I was just floored by the guys from New Zealand. They're just phenomenal managers. They've really gotten plant growth regulator applications and fungicide timing down to an art form. That was kind of my opinion. And they were very inspiring to visit with. I learned a lot from them. So we're going to start viewing things a little bit differently. You know, we've always thought we were proactive in our fungicide timing. But now it's like, it's not days, it's hours. You've got to be on schedule.
Yeah, it puts a lot of pressure on, especially when you got a few acres to get over. It'd be one thing if you're covering a one-acre plot, you can probably get that done, weather permitting. But, you know, over a large set of acres, that's going to be tough. And I know for me, just the real attention to detail on growth stages was such a big thing with in-crop management. Those guys were, wow. They said, you know, if somebody comes on our farm, that's going to be the first thing is, well, let's see how good they are at this. And if they don't know this part of the operation, I don't know how much we're going to listen.
Absolutely. Wheat is no different than corn and beans. I look at all the guys that are out, you know, raising the bar and setting the records, you know, nationally and now internationally, getting to know the guys from New Zealand. And it's attention to detail, and they understand and they know how the crop is doing and what's happening at those stages. If you don't know what stage your wheat is in and understand what's going on, you're not going to hit optimum yields.
Nope, that's for sure. Yeah, there's so much to watch out in our crops, and it's easy to fall in love with one crop. For most guys, it seems to be either corn or cotton is their very favorite crop, but other crops like soybeans and then the one we're talking about today, wheat, sometimes get neglected a little bit, and being really fussy about doing things right is so critical. With the seed treatment piece that we're talking about today, you know, Lee, you've been talking about a broad spectrum product for a lot of different diseases, so you don't have to worry. And that peace of mind has to make the price worth it, even though you might get a big gain one year and a smaller gain the next.
Yeah, it pays year in, year out. Like you said, some years it's a huge return and your cost is covered for the next 10 years. Maybe the next year you double your money, but it's still a gain. And like you said, it's an insurance policy. And you need it every year. It's just something you just need to do.
Yep, that's for sure. Well, Lee, thank you so much. Really appreciate you being so generous with your time once again, and thanks for sharing some info about raising better wheat.
Anytime.
All right, Brian, wheat seed treatments, what are you looking for?
Yeah, it's several things. And, you know, we've been talking about it all show, but I'm really focused on that fungicide piece, and I want multiple modes of action. Insecticide is super important. Depends on where you're at in terms of what kind of dosage we're going to be talking about, but it's going to be one of those imidacloprid type products, either Gaucho, Poncho, Cruiser, one of those active ingredients. And then it's that biological side. So there are a lot of them out there. The big thing we tell you all the time is try some things on your farm to find out what works for you. But we've got some products that we're really, really happy with. So we're going to continue with those. But I just say it's a big deal anymore. You know, when you start talking about, okay, let's say I have three fungicides, I got an insecticide, I use some biologicals, we're going to probably have on a lot of our corn, soybeans, wheat, 25 to 30 different biologicals. And you go, oh my gosh, how can you possibly do that? And that's going to really wet the seed down and those types of things. No, it's not. If you know what you're doing, you use the right product, it works good. And I would just say going forward, you're going to find a lot more people getting into the biologicals, or as I would call them, the natural products, things that already exist in our environment. We're just taking them from one area, using them in another area, or maybe bumping up the rate of plant growth hormones, those types of things. Those can all be done. They can be done if you do them correctly, very safely, cost efficiently, and absolutely increase your yield if they're put in the right situation. So that's what we're looking at: fungicide, insecticide, biologicals.
All right. When we're looking at that seed treatment piece too with wheat, it seems to be a little different than some of the other crops. So much of it gets done on the farm. Having a couple different cones where he was putting his chemistry piece in one, which all plays together fairly well for the most part, and then putting biologicals in a separate one so they can come together at the last possible minute.
Yeah, and that's the way it has to be done. It's just that when we start thinking about seed corn, that's all done at the plant. When you think about soybeans, that's done at the seed dealer. Whereas wheat, you know, a lot of times the wheat is sitting on the farm already, so you're not going to haul it somewhere, treat it, then haul it back in a lot of cases. But yeah, you got to have pretty sophisticated equipment to get all this done, you know, all the things that I'm talking about, at least.
Getting a number of emails, radio@agphd.com is our email address if you'd like to send us an agronomic question. We'll talk a little more about wheat seed treatments and get to some of those questions from our listeners coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Nil. Nada. Nothing. That's how many documented cases of resistance you'll find with Manzaid ProStick. You heard right. Nil, nada, nothing. Not all fungicides can say this, but Manzaid ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Manzaid ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Worried about weeds? Knock down tough species more efficiently and effectively with the Enlist Weed Control System. Enlist Duo Herbicide offers a convenient blend of new 2,4-D choline and glyphosate. For use in crops with the Enlist trait, Enlist Duo features the innovative Colex-D technology to provide near-zero volatility and minimized potential for physical drift. Farmers are discovering Enlist Duo stays where it's applied. And just as important, it wilts tough weeds quickly. Learn more at Enlist.com.
With Preaxor's Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF. We create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. We're talking about wheat seed treatments on today's program, and a lot of crops, like Brandon mentioned before, corn gets treated at the plant. Unless you're in an organic situation or you specifically say, I really can't have seed treatment for whatever reason on my corn, you're getting it. And it's super important. Why is it on there? Because the seed corn companies know what a difference it's making. With soybeans, most of them in the United States get bought at a retailer, and that retailer offers seed treatment, and we're seeing a huge percentage of those soybeans go out treated as well. Why? Because it's helping. It's making a difference. In wheat, since so much of that gets done on the farm, it's just another job that you have to do at a busy time of year, and I get it that it's pretty easy to say, oh man, I got too much going on already. Or to look at wheat and say, boy, I don't know if I'm going to make money this year. I don't want to spend the money on this treatment because you're buying it in one big chunk. And maybe you've got 1,000 acres of wheat and you say it's going to cost $3 or something for this great wheat seed treatment. You say, man, $3,000. I don't know. Please look at it on a per acre basis and look at your return on investment. If it's only $3 an acre, wow, why would you not do it? It's something that has potential to save you a lot more than that. All right. We're getting a lot of questions in for the Ag PhD mailbag. So want to jump to those.
We already played mailbag music earlier in the show, Darren. Go ahead.
Okay. All right.
unless you just love hearing mailbag music.
No, I don't remember that we did. But all right. I guess we did. Okay. So we got a question from John. And he said, are you going to have a tiling clinic this year? I'm interested in more information on properly installing drain tile.
Well, I don't know where he is from, but yes, we are going to up in the Minot, Mohall, North Dakota area in the middle of September. I don't believe we have those dates on agphd.com yet, but we'll try to get them there this week. And then we also are, I believe we're going to do something in eastern Montana as well. So those are the only two things where we're going to be out in the field going through tiling and talking about what you need to do to get all that going. In terms of a tiling clinic at our farm, no, we're not doing anything. Next year at our field day, we will again have tiling going. So if you'd like to come to that, you certainly can. Oh, if you've got specific questions for us too, just let us know and we can help you.
Thanks, John. Get a question from Mark. And Mark said, I was watching one of your shows. You were talking about managing soil compaction in July. I'm curious, how often do you run deep tillage equipment in your fields? Do you run them every couple of years? Do you run them only when you have a problem? Do you have a regular program? Just curious what you guys are actually doing.
Oh, I thought you were going to answer that. Yeah, it's on a basically as-needed basis. We're not doing deep tillage very often. We have gone through just about all of our fields a couple of times. We go on 30-inch centers, narrow point, straight shank, and all we're trying to do is kind of lift the soil a little bit and cut slots through the compaction. We're going down to in that 18 to 20-inch depth. It works really good. We like that. We're not real big believers in doing it every single year unless you've got major compaction areas. So we will do it on a much more regular basis where we have to have trucks driving all the time or field approaches, that type of thing.
Yep. If we've got compaction out there, we're definitely going after it. If we don't have any compaction, I'm going to do this.
You can't use the words. If we don't have any compaction, there's no one in the history of the world that's ever not had any compaction on a field. You put a foot out there and you have compaction. So it's all the degree of compaction. And what we're talking about here is what's limiting your root growth? What's limiting your nutrient movement? All these types of things. What's limiting water? And I mean, everything. So what we really care about is how bad is the compaction? That's the question. So we want to try to minimize compaction all the time, but understanding compaction is just a part of farming, always has been, always will be.
All right, let's go to the next question here. This one's from Randy, and Randy is in Texas, I believe. Randy says, let me start off by saying I'm watching you guys every week on your show, and your tips have helped me. I do have a couple questions. I'm from Central Texas. You guys talk about pyrethroids are very inexpensive, a lot of times only a couple of bucks. Yep. Now, one of the issues I've got is right on the label, in bold red letters, they often say they're pollinator unfriendly in one way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
And they also are not just contact killers. There's some residual that could be harmful to pollinators too.
That's correct.
Well, all of the crops that we're growing, whether it's peanuts, corn, cotton, milo, produce, etc., we've got bees out there. And in fact, we even have to rent bees for some of our crops because in our area, we've got a low population of pollinators. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how you make this decision when you bring into account that a lot of the crops that you're raising are needing pollinators to be there. Do you have a way you can spray these products without hurting the pollinators? And is it worth it for me to spray it at very low thresholds when I've got a little more that I could lose?
Okay, so first of all, when we talk about low thresholds and then you just use the words more that I could lose, well, that all has to play into the economics of everything that you're doing. So yeah, you absolutely have to look at that other side. I would say that most of the crops that we're talking about and when we spray, pollinators aren't out there. So I'm not too concerned about it. Now, that's not to say that there might be some bees nearby. And so you want to work hand in hand with any beekeepers, anything like that. In terms of being able to spray out there, when bees are present, you're not going to be able to use a pyrethroid. There's no pyrethroid I know that isn't going to kill bees. Now, you could use something like Transform in certain crops that is not as harmful on bees. You have to be a little bit careful, you know, about what you're spraying and when you're spraying it. And they give you a lot of those directions on the label. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a concern. It's something we all have to be worried about. And let's turn this around. Instead of talking about insecticides, let's talk about herbicides. You know, most herbicides, why are we using them? What the very definition of a herbicide is, it's going to kill something. It's going to kill a plant. Well, if I'm out spraying a volunteer corn herbicide in soybeans and a little bit drifts over into a neighbor's cornfield, I'm going to damage the neighbor's corn. So it's the same kind of thing as damaging the neighbor's bees or damaging your bees. I mean, we all have to be careful and we have to be responsible about what we're using out there and when we're using those products. So what a lot of people will talk about is just spraying at different times of the year if there are going to be pollinators in the area. You know, if we hit them at a time of year that they're not there, great. We can kill the insects and then we don't have to worry about the pollinators. Also, at certain times of day, maybe in the evening or overnight, not a big issue. Definitely in the middle of the day, that's where we're seeing more of the pollinators around. So there are certain management practices that can be done to minimize the negative impacts.
Yeah, the other thing, if you've got irrigation, you could spray, kill the bugs that are out there, and then a day later, irrigate and try and wash off as much stuff as you can, trying to reduce residual. You usually have less residual if you're getting lots of rainfall.
That's true.
All right, lots of things that could be done, but I realize it is definitely an issue when you've got bees around. Thanks, Randy. Really appreciate the question. Come on from Dora here. She said, is there anything that can be applied to control pigweed in soybeans after they have started to bloom?
Sure. Ultra Blazer's still labeled. Cobra's still labeled. You know, when we start talking about products like Flexstar, the rotational restriction just gets to be way too limiting. Cadet is out there. So, I mean, there are some products that can be used. And certainly, you know, when you think about the new Enlist that's coming, hopefully that's going to get approved, so you'd be able to spray 2,4-D late. Liberty and Liberty Link soybeans is labeled up to R2, and so that's full flower. And even Extend in certain states is labeled all the way to R1, so that's first flower. So you could technically see flowers still be at R1, spray Extend or Extendamax or Ingenia or one of those products, and be on label. So there are many products that will have activity.
All right, thanks for the question, Dora. Really appreciate that. Got a comment here from John. He said, you're talking about compaction. Poor soil health is generally a huge thing that leads to more compaction in our area. That's a good observation.
Everywhere. Yep, that's why we talk about having good drainage, building organic matter, having the right nutrients in the soil so you have more root growth, and then eventually you have more organic matter and better soil health.
Be right back after this. Stay tuned.
They don't leave nicely. When worms and aphids attack your crop, fight back with Nudrin. Nudrin is a powerful insecticide that's applied after your crop has emerged. Its quick knockdown and almost immediate control stops worms and aphids in their tracks. Learn more about Nudrin and how to protect your crops from in-season invasions. Visit us at rotamnorthamerica.com. That's rotamnorthamerica.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Looking for an affordably priced fertilizer additive proven to boost yields in row crops? More than 1,000 third-party research trials concluded that Nutex EDA increases yield over 80% of the time. Nutex EDA is a micronutrient-based fertilizer additive that works by supporting the plant's enzyme processes to increase nutrient uptake of your applied NPK fertilizers. Try Nutex EDA this spring to maximize the return on investment of your fertilizer dollar.
Grow corn that pays you back for your investment. Headline Amp Fungicide from BASF is the smart choice. It consistently delivers plant health and disease control benefits like increased stress tolerance. You get more yield from an at-tassel application than any other fungicide, with best-in-class preventative and post-infection disease control. Grow smart with BASF and Headline Amp. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, looking at some questions that have come in here. Got one from Eric in Northwest Indiana, and he said, I really appreciate your radio show and the information you're sharing. Got a question that hopefully you can answer. We're growing mint here in Northwest Indiana. The main herbicide for mint is a product called Sinbar, S-I-N-B-A-R. We run a pound per acre applied late April. After 3 to 5 years of a perennial mint crop, we typically run heavy tillage in the late summer to early fall after final harvest, as we need to level out the field after the few years of moldboard plowing. After disc ripping, we typically spread a cover crop, work it in with a mulch finisher. we can also apply with a Gandy box. We're mainly after preventing wind and water erosion, and our secondary goal is to scavenge nutrients. We've struggled to find a cover crop that fits this role, as cinnabar carryover, especially on a dry year, is really hard on it. We've used cereal rye with some success, but in areas it really takes off and can get out of control on us. The other areas, well, not so much. Now, planting corn the next year is hard to set a planter properly from the unevenness in growth of cover crop. We always follow mint with corn the next spring because cinnabar carryover again could be really hard on soybeans. So wondering what we could do. Unevenness of growth out there is tough. And I'm wondering, Eric, you know, what your soil samples show where you have good growth versus poor growth. If there's a pH difference, if there's a nutrient difference. I'd be curious to do a little more investigation on that to try and figure out why it's growing in one area and not in another, because this may lead you to some conclusions on cinnabar that, wow, it's more effective in one pH than another. We often see this with herbicides that they work well in either a high pH or a low pH, and in the opposite situation, not as much. So the carryover wouldn't be as bad in those areas.
I'm no expert in cinnabar, but I will tell you cinnabar is a group 15. Group 5. Other group 5 products include Velpar, which I don't really like in alfalfa, Princip, Pramitol. By the way, Pramitol is a ground sterilant, so is Hyvar. They're both group 5s. Metribuzin that we talk about all the time, and atrazine. So we do know with both atrazine and metribuzin, and, you know, with just doing a little research, I could find you this information too on cinnabar. You're gonna most likely see it on the MSDS or on the label. But in terms of that pH thing, when I start thinking about the other group 5s that I am very familiar with, like metribuzin and atrazine, they are absolutely more active in high pH soils. Now, when you talk about rotation with cinnabar, it'll tell you right on the label that you have to wait a year before you can plant anything. And after 1 year, you can only plant alfalfa, apples, blueberries, mint, peaches, and strawberries. After 2 years, then you can plant another crop. So if we start talking about cover crops and things like that, you know, it's a little different than an actual crop. A cover crop is just simply there to grow a little bit, give a home for some of the beneficial microbes that are in the soil, prevent erosion, stop some weeds from coming up. So I don't care if we kill part of a cover crop or we damage part of a cover crop. And there's a whole difference. There's a whole big difference between killing something and damaging something. You wouldn't want to damage your corn crop, but if it's a cover crop and it has slight damage, it's still going to give you most of the benefit of that cover crop.
Well, that may be the case, but Eric's also talking about how, well, when I have good growth of the cover crop in some area and not much growth in the other, now it's an uneven...
Right, it's a soil difference.
Yeah, it's a problem for my planter as I come through trying to get corn established the next year.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so when we talk about cover crops and letting them get too big, the first thing I'm thinking about is terminating them earlier, maybe even terminating them in the fall, but otherwise terminating them early in the spring. We were talking, I think it was yesterday's show, about somebody who wanted to mulch their cover crop. And I said, you can do that. You can go use a good burn down herbicide. I mean, whatever you want to do. But yeah, absolutely. If you've got such a thick mat out there that's preventing you from getting a good stand of your next crop, well, now that cover crop is no longer beneficial. That cover crop is detrimental, just like weeds are. So you've got to do something to get that taken care of. If it's me, I'm just killing it off in the fall instead of the spring, and I'm done. But, you know, you're going to have to figure that out.
All right. Yeah. It's tough when you have a herbicide like that has such long residual. And, I would go with what's working with you. If the grasses seem to survive much better, I'd focus on getting some different grass species out there to see what'll take more than broadleaves, which it seems to wipe out pretty well. Hey, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Eric. Okay, got one from John here, and he said, for generations in our area, we've had great luck with many of the grass-type crops, brome, timothy, oats, mixed with our alfalfa when we're talking about cover crops. I'm just a farmer trying to figure this thing out here, but what I've seen from my observation is don't start with a big mix the first time you're going out there with these cover crops. a big mix is plants that are new to you that you've never been able to grow before and you might not be able to control. Basically, you're bringing in a weed.
Right.
So my exactly. thought is start with just a more narrow mix when you're getting going and begin with that. No, John, I agree with you that if you've never raised something before, it makes it really difficult. And we get a lot of questions like that. Hey, I had this vetch in my cover crop, and now I can't kill the stuff. What do I do? Or many different species over the last few years especially.
Yeah, by the same token, you got to be smart. So if all you were going to do is throw radishes out there, well, that probably isn't going to work very well because radishes don't support mycorrhiza fungi. So we still encourage you to use a blend, but yes, maybe starting with fewer things would be good. I generally will tell people use a grass crop, a broadleaf crop, and okay, when I talk broadleaf crops, I'm probably going to split that in two. So I go with a legume, something that can produce a little nitrogen for me, and something like a turnip or radish to bust up compaction. So I have three species, two broadleaves and a grass. That's usually my minimum for where I would start.
All right, I got some soil tests here. This is from Sean, and I'm guessing Sean's in, let's see, South Carolina. Here we go. So he said, I'm going to raise some rye grass for hay. Yeah, I've currently got some fescue out there, but I know I need to do some liming. I've got a low pH. This is just a 15-acre parcel here. I've taken four samples to try and break it up. What would you recommend for me for lime? I don't have a sample of the lime, but I do have a sample of the soil. What would you like to see for fertility on soils like this?
Okay, so the first thing is I don't see a cation exchange capacity number on here, so I don't really know if it's heavy soil or light soil. I'm assuming with what the buffer pH says, and these are soil tests, by the way, out of Clemson University, so I'm not familiar with their specific tests and exactly how they're doing it, but with the buffer pH, what it looks like to me is it is not going to take a whole lot of lime for you. So I would simply ask that lab what they say. And then you are going to need some kind of analysis on that lime, whether you get it from your lime supplier, or my preference is always just take that material and test it yourself so you know for sure what you've got. But you're going to have to figure it out one way or the other, because the calcium content that's in there is really going to play a major role in what your lime rate is. So as we always say, take a sample of the lime, take a sample of the soil, send them both into the lab and let them tell you, hey, this is how many pounds you're going to need. I would also note on here, the boron is low, the copper's low. Let's see, what else do I have here? You know, most of the rest of the stuff isn't bad. Potassium's low. Phosphorus is really low. So there are a number of other things on here that you're going to want to take a look at. And with all crops, whether it is rye or any crop, you want to look at the AgPHD fertilizer removal app, and it will tell you how many total nutrients you need to produce a certain amount of tons or a certain amount of bushels. And that's really where you've got to start. And you got to ask yourself the question, hey, can my soil provide all this for this crop and this yield goal or tonnage goal? Can it do it or not? What else am I going to have to add?
You know, when you think about it too, Sean had sent another sample, and this was a sample of the fescue, just a feed analysis of the fescue hay. And we don't raise that here, but so I don't really have an opinion on what you think. You said they got a lot of early rain there, and so it got cut kind of late this year. But when you're looking at whether it's this fescue or whether it's the ryegrass that you're going to be growing, and you're feeding cattle with that, getting the nutritional content in that grass is just so important, and it improves your rate of gain. Start reading about some of the micronutrients and the difference you're seeing with the proper zinc level, for example. You can double the rate of gain compared to a hay source that's really low in zinc. So anyway, I love that you're getting a full analysis on your hay. I would recommend that going forward. Nice work on that, Sean. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more AgPHD Radio.